Step into the wealth elevator and join our 12,000 plus member community who have passively invested over $200 million to acquire over $2.1 billion in commercial real estate. Sign up by going to thewealthelevator.com/club, and here we go.
And everything we do is done with a social impact in mind. Our mission is to work with these families who are struggling with their mortgage in order to find sustainable solutions that oftentimes other lenders are not willing to consider.
This is a story about a dude named Lane. He moved to the mainland and bought one place to stay. And then one day he went and tried to rent them out. And then he became one real investor man.
Hey, Simple Passive Cashflow Nation. This is George Newberry again, doing another webinar. A few years later, we met, back in 2016. I've been investing in AHP since then. I've got about enough money to put in there to get my car payment paid for me for the last 3 years. So thanks for that, George.
You're welcome. I hope you're enjoying the car.
Yeah, it's been a couple cars, but the money keeps coming in every month to pay for that. So we are going to be talking about AHP servicing and the you guys are buying some new notes and
correct,
reopening the fund to new investors. So this is a Reg A plus offering, which also includes non-accredited investors and accredited investors. And we can mass market this since you have the right filing created. But I'll let you drive from here. And if anybody has questions, they can type it into the question and answer box and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to go through about 8 slides, just kind of give everyone, anyone who's new, a history of AHP, and also for the, and then provide some updates and our visions for the future, especially for those who are existing investors and already know. So, and then at the end, any questions you have, I'm here to answer them all. And I appreciate your interest. Just to correct a little bit on Lane, I appreciate your introduction. The fund has actually been reopened since November. This is the first time we're actually reaching out, raising awareness again, in order to, because we see a new, we have a pool that we're trying to close next week, and there's a couple of other pools that we are working on for April. So we are trying to back into capital raising mode on a decent scale. So I appreciate the introduction again, Lane. My name is George Newberry. I'm the founder and CEO of both American Homeowner Preservation and AHP Servicing. And I'll share a little bit about us. So American Homeowner Preservation, we started 12 years ago in 2008. We're a nationwide purchaser of non-performing mortgages, particularly those secured by homes in low to moderate income neighborhoods. Many a times we've discovered that the largest banks in Wall Street don't like to deal with the lower balance loans, and they're more prone to selling those at margins that we can generate good returns on. When we started buying loans, we were advised that we need to use a licensed servicer to service our loans. And we started out with a company called Resurgent Servicing, and then we went to a company called Faye Servicing, which is here in Chicago. Then we went to FCI. Then we went to SN Servicing. Then we went to Home Servicing. Then we went to Land Home, BSI, Carrington. And every time I thought that this servicer will be the one that provides the service that matches what we're expecting. And every time we were disappointed. So in 2017, it was kind of like we've used every servicer. None of them has performed to our expectations. And we talked to other note investors and funds, and they lamented about the same problems with their servicers, that they're just not that great. So the thought was we decided to become AHP, create our own servicer. It's AHP Servicing. It's a nationwide mortgage servicer, and we service loans, both those loans that are owned by AHP as well as loans owned by third parties. We have dozens of third-party clients. And when we service, we still are executing the same vision we had originally, which is to treat homeowners with respect and to especially in low to moderate income neighborhoods, where many a times Wall Street kind of neglects the needs or the customization of workouts for them. We've strived to deliver solutions that homeowners find very favorable, but that also generate solid returns for investors. And over the years, we've kept thousands of homes in their thousands of homeowners in their homes. We put thousands of vacant homes back into service. We've extinguished hundreds of millions in negative equity. And today, millions of dollars annually are being saved by homeowners on their payments as a result of AHP's intervention. Here's the timeline.
Yeah. Well, let me kind of just, so we don't lose any investor.
Sure.
You know what? So what George and his team does is they buy mostly non-performing notes. So we all, those of us who are homeowners, you know, you have a mortgage and that is paper. So investors can actually sort of buy that paper from the bank who originates that paper. In some cases, I don't know how much percent of the time they go non-performing. The person is sort of naughty and doesn't pay their bills, and it turns into a non-performing note. And that is where someone like George can go and buy them in huge lots. I mean, how much is this next lot you're going to buy? Like, how many millions?
It's a few million dollars, but it's higher value home. So it's 27 loans totaling about $8 million in debt.
So they're going to buy it at a huge discount. And what George does with his service, you heard that word earlier, servicing company. The servicers are the ones who call the homeowner and say, hey man, you know, you're behind on your payments. What's going on? You know, can we come to work on an agreement? Since we bought it at a discount, there might be some margin for, you know, keep you in that home and you maybe we lower your payments or work something out. So it's kind of a win-win situation all the way around. And we're also, you know, investors in the fund, of course they get theirs too.
So that's great. I appreciate Lane, you sharing that. Sometimes I get in the thick of this and I forget it. People don't realize a lot of people, it's difficult to imagine initially that, you know, somebody owes Chase Bank $100,000 and Chase Bank decides to sell that loan for $50,000 for whatever reason. And that's not uncommon. Now, the question is, what happens to the other $50,000? It's still due from the homeowner, but Chase has written it off. It's gone to them. And now we've bought it for $50,000 and we can, if the homeowner wants to stay, we can provide a modification that oftentimes can reduce the principal, can forgive some of the delinquency, reduce the mortgage payment, and still generate a good return because we bought it for 50 when they really owed 100. And the same is if they don't want to stay in the home or it's already vacant, we try to track them down and offer them cash for a deed in lieu. And when we get that, then we sell the property. And you know, if we're buying, they owe 100 and we're buying it for 50, it's probably worth 90, you know, the home's worth 90. So actually more commonly they owe 150, it's worth 100 and we're buying it for 50. So the discounts are pretty substantial. And that's because banks are looking at it. Okay. If we spend a year or more to foreclose on this and spend all these legal fees and taxes and other holding costs, those are going to cost us this plus time and effort. It's better just to take those losses now and reduce it and sell it to AHP or any of the other number of funds that buy these types of loans. Now, to give you the history, when we started in 2008, we were actually a nonprofit organization. We received our 501c3 from the IRS. We would advocate one by one for the homeowner with their different lenders. And we discovered that the lenders and the servicers were not quick to resolve these loans, not quick to respond to requests, oftentimes requests that were very provided favorable outcomes for the lenders. So that led to us becoming a for-profit and deciding to buy these mortgages so then we could control it. So the banks regularly sell mortgages, oftentimes in large pools, and it could be banks, hedge funds, other lenders, and they'll sell those loans to us. And then we would buy the loans and then reach out to the homeowners through our servicer. And initially we started a hedge fund. It was accredited investors only. It was Reg B, fairly simple to set up. And we would raise money from friends and family. We couldn't advertise. We couldn't even really speak to the media. And that's what we did initially. And that went well. But when I heard about crowdfunding in 2013, I said, that's a great way to expand our audience. So we started using 506C, which allows us to generally solicit and essentially market the offering, go on Lane's podcast, Simple Passive Cashflow, and share the opportunity freely. And we started doing that in 2013. But there was one big restriction, was that even though we could tell everybody about what we're doing and market our fund, we could only accept investments from accredited investors. And we had a lot of non-accredited investors come to us, and they would sometimes even show up in our office with good sized checks, and we could not accept it. So that was frustrating. But when we heard about Regulation A+, which allows us to crowdfund from not only accredited and non-accredited, we promptly engaged an attorney to go through the SEC qualification process. And in 2016, we were the 16th company in the country to raise money utilizing Regulation A+, opening this to non-accredited investors. That grew a lot. In our first month of operation, this is the 2015 A+ fund, we raised about $500,000. By the 24th month, because the SEC allows you to raise money for 24 months, the 24th month, we raised over $10 million. So in 1 month, so it went from $500,000 to $10 million in 2 years. So it grew. So that fund closed, 2015 A+, closed in May of 2018.
And that was the fund that I joined in initially.
That's when we first met Lane, correct.
And I've been investing ever since. And I just want to say that the Reg A Plus offering is really cool, because now you can bring in non-accredited investors. And as you were a non-accredited investor at one time, George, I mean, mm-hmm. How do you get yourself over a $1 million net worth when you're investing in garbage investments, right? Like, and that's the frustrating part. And you're not allowed to invest in most deals until you are.
It's very frustrating. And especially today, think about how low the interest rates are today. If you go to the bank, you know, they're going to offer you on a savings account something 1% and 0.1 point something of that. And so it's it becomes very frustrating. So you can save and make very, very little. And there's other investments open to non-accredited investors, but they're typically lower yielding. And you're right, it's tough to get ahead with that. So Reg A is definitely something we've embraced. And we, in fact, did our second Regulation A Plus offering, which launched in November 2018. And that was for AHP servicing. This one was a little bit different than 2015 A Plus in that it had two purposes. One was to do what we have always done, which is to purchase non-performing loans at big discounts. But the second thing we were doing with the money that we raised was to build out a nationwide mortgage servicer. And that's what we've endeavored to do. We're still working on it. And there's still a couple of states, as we'll get to a little bit later, that we're working on approval on. And then finally, I want to share, and I'll share a little bit later more details, but this last week, we launched a new product, which is called Pre-REO, which is a platform to connect local investors with holders of defaulted mortgages secured by vacant properties in order to help address the problem of these vacant properties that are oftentimes sitting in limbo. And we've come up with a solution that appears to be getting some traction with some of the larger funds. And I'll share a little bit on that in a few moments. So right now, let's talk about the national servicer. So as with many entrepreneurial activities or pursuits, you know, we did not think it would take as long as it has to get this going, the servicing portion. And also, so it's costing more money and taking more time. So here's the big advantages to being a national servicer. One is, as an investor in mortgages, we can much better control the disposition of our assets. We can act nimbly and fast and to move things along. Move things along towards a resolution. The other big advantage is the ability to generate fee income. So this is an operating business. We're charging fees to service loans for other funds and other mortgage holders, and we charge fees for doing that. And that fee income is there whether we're in a down market or an up market. So if things are going bad in the real estate market and prices are declining and there's a lot of defaults, we charge fees. If the market is increasing and it's tough to buy loans like it is today with good margins, and you know, the real estate market is strong like it is today, then we still charge fees. Every time any of us who have a mortgage is paying that mortgage, it's to a servicer typically, and that servicer is taking a modest fee. And but they do that times thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and even in some cases, millions of loans. And that's how the mortgage servicers make money. So our challenges so far have been the licensing process, which we started in mid-2017, is taking longer than expected. We're now licensed in 48 states, plus Puerto Rico. The only two outstanding licenses are California and New York, and those are both in process. We believe we're near the end of those that process in both states, but it's still, I wish it were today. I'm hoping it's going to be in the next 30 to 60 days. And this is a startup. We're a startup mortgage servicer with costs that are front-loaded. We've signed a contract for almost $1 million on our servicing technology and a number of other personnel costs and other vendor costs in order to get this set up. So it is costing more and taking more time than expected. But the upside is we have a management team that we've attracted some of the top talent in the industry. The most recent hire started this week. He just came from Goldman Sachs. And so people are leaving much bigger companies to join AHP because they believe in the vision and they can see a roadmap where this company is very successful. We are transitioning to Black Knight servicing technology. This should go live next month in April. And one of the impetus for this is some of the larger, I should say, most of the largest servicers in the country are using Black Knight technology. Now it was cost prohibitive when we started, but it's something that we've found is essential to us going forward if we want to scale as a servicer, because many of the biggest funds in the country are using servicers that have Black Knight. They've built different integrations with Black Knight. Even the regulators prefer Black Knight just because it's something that they're familiar with. So we made the decision to move to Black Knight, and getting those final two state approvals should open up. We should be able to get a lot of larger funds to say we're going to service with AHP. The other component to growing is getting government approvals. So we don't just service these distress loans like we've historically been doing, but we can also service loans backed by the VA, FHA, Fannie, and Freddie. So we did recently get our VA approval. So we can now service and purchase loans that are backed by the VA. And we're also working on getting the same designation for FHA, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac. Finally, in December, we were designated a minority-owned business, and that is going to that should also help get additional government contracts. Plus, many banks like Chase, for instance, have mandates to award some of their business to minority-owned firms. So we believe that will also be helpful in our plans to grow. So ingredients to growth, there are two big ones. One is those two final states. I need to get California, I need to get New York. We're really focused on that. And we need to get the Blacklight technology fully implemented. That should happen the 1st of April. And then the ingredients to grow big is to get those remaining government approvals. And then probably the biggest factor is, and what the original vision was, is that once we have the servicer fully set up, fully licensed everywhere, and a downturn hits, we will be extremely well positioned to both act as a servicer for third parties and buy more loans and service those and ultimately help more families. There's many competitors that service 40,000 to 100,000 loans. You know, the typical servicing fee ranges from $20 to $95. That's a big range. The reason for that is that $20, that's probably a loan which is just making a payment on time every month. It's a performing loan. The $95 loan would probably be one, or $95 servicing fee would probably be applied to a loan that's in bankruptcy or has severe litigation. So that's the range of servicing fees. But it leads us to a goal where we can get to $1 million in monthly gross servicing fee revenue at some point in our future. And that's what we're working towards. And that's why we're attracting the talent that we are, because we think we see a huge opportunity here.
So for those of us who are like rental property owners, that $20 and $95, think of that as like the property manager's take. Yep. Usually they'll take like 10% of the gross revenue. They'll also take half a month to a full month's rent of a new lease up fees too. So don't forget about that. But is there a certain percentage that normally is of the mortgage they bring in, or?
So lots of times on government loans, for instance, it's 25 basis points. So if the mortgage is, $100,000, they're probably getting $25 per month on that loan. As an example, with distress loans, there's usually no monthly payments. So it's typically just a set fee, which could be, you know, often $40 to $95. So that's what we see as the opportunity. You know, we've served with, we currently in New York, for instance, we have loans that we own in New York, but we can't service them ourselves. So we use a third party, which is called SN Servicing. Our understanding from them is they service about 40,000 loans. And then Faith Servicing is in our building. We understand that they service over 100,000 loans. So it's definitely a business that's always there, can always generate income. And the fact that this downturn is ever elusive, because a year ago I was thinking, oh, it's going to turn soon, and it hasn't really turned. This enables us to, in that interim, generate fee income. And so here's another, as we talk about fee income, HP 2015 A+ purchased a lot of loans that were first mortgages backed by vacant homes, particularly in judicial foreclosure states. And this would be a state like New York, where it could take 2 to 3 years to foreclose, even if nobody's fighting the foreclosure. It's just the process takes forever. So there's a lot of incentive to find the borrower and make a deal, but sometimes that can't happen. The borrower may have passed away. There may be a second mortgage, which doesn't want to make any kind of settlement deal. So you have to complete the foreclosure to get title of the home. It could be a divorce. Both parties don't agree. So any of those situations leave these vacant homes sitting in states. It could be New York, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Florida. There's many other judicial foreclosure states where it's going to take a year plus to foreclose. And this is a big problem for us and for other lenders. They will get requests from the city to cut the grass, shovel the snow, board up the property, do a registration, vacant property registration on the property. The property could be subject to vandalism or other deterioration. So we have been scratching our head about how do we get a better solution to these mortgages. And we, instead of just going through the foreclosure process when we can't make a deal with the homeowner, and we came up with the concept of pre-REO. And pre-REO is a site that just went live last week. It has some real live assets on it. We've already actually sold a few. And what we're doing is we're trying to connect lenders such as ourselves with local investors, fix and flip, rehab buyers, real estate investors, like you probably have many in your audience, and they can buy these assets. And what they're doing is they're buying a first mortgage, but we provide them a roadmap to do a few things that are unusual. One is to work with a law firm to appoint a receiver to take control of the property, repair it, and lease it during the foreclosure process. And that is something where instead of that asset, that first mortgage, the mortgage holder having to pay taxes, insurance, and other carrying costs and be at risk for vandalism and things like that, they can simply sell it at a price that's attractive to them, because they're eliminating all those costs and time. And it's also attractive to the real estate investor, because they're probably buying an REO at 75% of what it would otherwise sell for as an REO. They're just getting it earlier in the process. And the ability to go and get a court order by appointing a local real estate agent or property manager to become, to take control of that property and lease it, is something that's unique and novel. And we've had a great response, not from other funds, about putting assets on there. Right now, there's a couple of hundred loans on there, mostly ones that we own. We expect in 30 days there to be over 1,000 assets all over the country. And the ones that are on there now are mostly low to moderate income neighborhoods, because those are mostly ours. As we reach out, there's a lot of other lenders who have much higher value assets in California and the West Coast, which we don't have many of, that will soon be going on there. Think about the fix and flip lenders. A lot of the fix and flip lenders are getting a lot of defaults. So we're pitching people to get their servicing, but also to offer those assets through pre-REO. Now, fee income, pre-REO is owned by AHP 2015 A+, and it is, we charge a $2,000 program fee for every asset is sold. So once again, fee income, which should be there, whether our ability to invest in distressed mortgages is there or is not there, we should be able to generate income from endeavors such as this. So I encourage you, I gave a lot in about 2 minutes, and that it's a fairly, I guess it's a fairly detailed concept, but I encourage people to go to pre-REO.com, especially if you're a real estate investor, And if there's nothing in your state like California or Hawaii, then you can create an alert. As soon as there are assets in there, then you will be notified. Now, this investment, now we're back to investing in AHP servicing, and Lane has touched on a few of these things, is why invest? Again, we're open to accredited and non-accredited investors. The minimum entry point, the minimum investment is $100. This is, you're investing in a business, you're investing in AHP servicing, which is uncorrelated to the market. We collect fees in a down market and an up market. Investors get their share of profits first, up to 10%. Liquidity, if you need your money back, we will undertake our best efforts to liquidate the investment and get your money back within 30 days. Big asterisks on that though, actually the slide's a little wrong here, so I'll correct it. If it's liquidated in the first year, the returns are reduced to 8%. In the second year, they're reduced to 9%. If you keep the money in the fund for at least 2 years, then you get to keep the full 10%. And everything we do is done with a social impact in mind. Our mission is to work with these families who are struggling with their mortgage in order to find sustainable solutions that oftentimes other lenders are not willing to consider. And so the investment right now, if you were to invest, we're going to be using those funds for our next purchase, which the one we're working on right now has an acquisition price of just over $4 million. And here are the numbers that may kind of make this more tangible. On that $4.1 million would be used to buy 27 loans. The average debt is $331,000. The total debt is $8.9 million. We're buying those loans for the 4.1, which equates to roughly $154,000 per loan. The home values here average $272,000, and the total estimated home values is $7.3. So think about that. We're buying it for 4.1. The families owe 8.9, and the estimated value of their homes are 7.3. So that gives you, we're buying it at $3 million plus, less than what the homes are worth, $4 million plus, less than what they currently owe. So we have a lot of flexibility when we go to these homeowners to try to make deals that are attractive to them. And if we can't make a deal with them, then we can go ahead and proceed with a foreclosure or sell it on Priorio.com and still realize a good return. So that is the current focus. And again, we're working on a couple of other opportunities for next month. This one we're trying to close next week, mid-March. The next two we're trying to close in April, and we'll share details as those come closer to closing. If you decide to invest, you can go to ahpservicing.com. You can invest without any, you can invest all online. The process is all automated with the exception of IRAs. We do accept IRA investments. You can start the investment online, but then we'll have to do some of the process off the platform, and one of our representatives will get in contact with you to do that. So that is what we're offering now.
So with these deals, it's a little bit different, like portfolio that you bought in the past. Normally you're kind of slumming it with $50,000, $100,000 houses, right? This is a lot better paper, a lot cleaner assets.
I would agree. It's an odd, let me backtrack for a moment. Right now we're not competitively bidding. So we will find, if we're just bidding against other people, it doesn't really work that well because so many people are willing to pay more than we are at this point in the market. However, we are looking for relationship type deals. This was brought to us. It's a modest sized deal brought to us by one of our partners. And it was backed by these higher value homes. So it definitely makes sense. We've done these before, but you're right. Typically they're much lower value homes, but this one, the discounts are still there even with the higher value. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so like what, 50 cents on every dollar? Is it for these nicer stuff?
Exactly. Well, yeah, they're usually trading at 50 to 60 cents, sometimes even more in today's market.
So on the lower class stuff, like the 50, 100 grand there, what's like the average, like 30 cents on the dollar?
It used to be around 30 cents and then it creeped up to 40, but now some of those are even trading in the 50s. And that's, if there's big issues with it, it can drop down to the 40s, but there are just not that many left anymore that are, that we can see at those types of price levels. It'll come back, but it's just not there today.
Right. So what George is trying to do here is he picks these properties up at 50 cents on the dollar. He turns around, he gives the homeowner a call and says, hey man, let's make a deal. Let's try and keep you in the house. Maybe we can lower your payment. There's obviously a lot of room for negotiation here. Obviously they don't know how much George picked it up for, so he has the cards on his favor. But anything you can say, like, what's like the average situation one of these guys are in? You know, like
it could be anyone from losing a job, a divorce, a death in the family.
How late are they behind? Like, what's the kind of the profile? I guess?
Yeah, it's oftentimes a year or more behind. So many of these are severely delinquent. They didn't just fall behind a couple of months ago. They're severely delinquent. And most of these would be in those judicial foreclosure states where it takes a while to foreclose, which is why the lender is looking to sell them at a decent sized discount.
And do you have an indication, like a guess, like how many of these people you can keep in their houses and how many you're just going to have to unload?
Yeah, sure. Good question. My guess is we'll probably end up, historically, we've kept about a third of the families in their homes. You know, originally when we conceived this, we thought that everyone would want to stay in their homes. That was, I think, maybe overly optimistic. Maybe a third, in reality, about a third of the people end up staying in their homes. Maybe a third will give us, take cash for deed in lieu. And there's going to be a third that nothing can, that there's no resolution except to proceed to a foreclosure. So that's the offering. It's certainly open to any. Are you asking questions or is there like a chat?
There's a chat. So if you guys want to type your questions in the chat, we can answer it there. There's one in there, but I've got a few questions.
Please.
That I had. So a lot of investors that invested in the first fund, you know, they kind of saw some personnel changes. They saw you leave for a little bit and then come back like a shining knight, like Howard Schultz did at Starbucks.
Steve Jobs.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about like kind of what went down and
sure.
some of the lessons so, learned?
Yeah, good question. So we hired a replacement. I stepped back. When we started the servicer, I had never started a mortgage servicer, and I had a tendency, and which I try to control now, but which is to micromanage a bit. I'm very driven to see everything done as well as possible, and it's tough to suddenly step back and say, well, someone else can probably do this better. And so in 2017, I started interviewing for replacements for me. And that person, I wanted somebody who had a lot of experience in the servicing industry and could come in and help set it up and set it up right. And I did find somebody. She came from a large local bank called Wintrust Bank and joined us and I stepped aside. And she did a good job building out the foundation for a real, I said real company, but we've always been a real company, but a company that we can scale into a large national mortgage servicer, which means that we need to have a top level managers, and then you know who can build and run successfully a team. And so Deanne came in, and she did a good job at building out the infrastructure for the servicer. What I think was a little bit of a disconnect was the types of assets that we historically purchased, which are these severely distressed loans in low to moderate income neighborhoods, which is oftentimes, it's tougher to drive, create processes around them. It can be done, but there's still some customization that's necessary in order to reach resolutions. And I think that was a little bit of a disconnect. So in July of last year, I came back in as the CEO, and you know, I kept some of the management team that she had, kept most of the management team. We changed some of the other personnel, and I've continued to build out the management team and have attracted a lot of top people in the industry over the last 6 months have joined the team as we kind of map our vision. But there was a disconnect, and what, you know, the evidence of the disconnect was that the, you know, our returns had dropped from, you know, in late 2017, we were in, had earned over 40% in 2017. And then in 2018, you know, the returns had dropped to the single digits. And that was probably
the result of a couple things. And part of it is the market. As I've shared, the market has gotten more difficult to buy these at big discounts. Also, I'm comfortable taking modest risks. And I even say more than modest risks on these loans. And I think it needs somebody to be comfortable making decisions with a portion of the information rather than all the information. And so when you wait for all the information to be in front of you and you say, hey, I'm ready to do this trade, it's a good trade, I've verified that. By the time you do all that research, lots of times the opportunity is gone. So you need to make decisions, in my experience, to succeed and reach and achieve above market returns. You need to make decisions with most of the information available. So I'll give you an example. A couple months ago, another servicer called and said, hey, we have this opportunity, but you got to close in 5 days. And here's the information. And it was clearly a great deal, but most other funds or investors in these will not be ready to close in 5 days because it's just too fast to move. They're not able to get all the reports and check all the boxes that they would normally do. And so I think prior management would have had a challenge getting that deal done. Now that deal clearly made a lot of sense. We did it. And into AHP servicing. So we look for those opportunities, especially because today's market it's difficult to find these types of deals. So again, we're not competitive bidding. We're doing relationship trades and we're focused on building out the servicer.
I mean, maybe talk a little bit more about that relationship thing, because we've purchased a couple, 2-3 buildings from the same seller. And It's nice to know when you buy from the same seller, you kind of know what level of skeletons are in the closet. There's always skeletons, but maybe from like the note perspective, like things that you don't really need to do full due diligence because maybe you have that relationship with the seller.
And absolutely. I agree. It's the same thing in notes. You know, somebody calls and you've done business with them before. They're an established company that you have a relationship with. You know, they're going to tell you, they're going to share what they know about the assets, good and bad. And, you know, we've had a bank call us, and this is a few years ago, but they called and said, hey, we had a couple times this happened where they'd sell, call it 100 loans and to some bigger fund. And at the end of the trade, that fund says, hey, these 10 loans, we don't want them. And we're going to kick them out of the trade. So they're kickouts. And then somebody will call us and say, hey, you can buy these, great pricing, but you got to close in 3 days, 2 days. And doing that and being nimble will be a, that's where you're going to get the best deals. Absolutely. But the only way you can do that comfortably, like you said, is to have a relationship. So there's somebody who you have a relationship with, whether it's company or person, and you trust them and they bring you something and you can take it at face value and then do some modest due diligence to be comfortable with it. Then you can go ahead and pull the trigger. And for the seller, I mean, I've been on both sides of this. When you need to sell or you have a problem, and I'll give an example. We'll have a home in New York, for instance, and the code enforcement says, hey, we need to get this home fixed up right away. And, you know, we get a bid from some contractor, which is $40,000 to do the fix up. And we're saying, you know, we own the mortgage. We don't want to put $40,000 into the fix up. But if we can sell that loan to a local note buyer who can buy the loan, can talk to the city and say, I'm going to take care of this. They probably can do it for half the price that we can. We're in Chicago, they're in New York. And so you see those situations that they can close fast and they can meet with the city face to face. They have a big advantage over us. And I'll sell to them that, you know, they'll buy from us and we can do those things very rapidly.
A couple other questions that came up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe through the last year, everybody was asking in my Facebook group, like, hey man, when is the AHP going to reopen? And I'm like, well, there's just nothing that they can make their margin of profit on. That's why they're not buying anything because the economy is going well. maybe can you talk a little bit about like, you know, when the inevitable recession happens, if it happens ever, how does your guys' strategy work in a more of a recession type environment?
Sure. So our strategy would work very well. We work actually better. We're at our best, I think, in a downturn where things are going wrong and banks and other lenders are unloading assets and there's more sellers than there are buyers. And we've been in that market. When we first started buying, it was like that. But over the last few years, it's changed and it's gone. So there's more buyers than there are sellers and that results in higher pricing. So we stopped raising money last May, And the reason we did is because we were being very successful raising money, but we weren't deploying it fast enough. And here's, you know, that's a big drag, has been a drag on our last 2 years of returns, is when you have money sitting, you know, in the bank or in escrow and not deployed earning money, then that's a problem. And so that has dragged returns. Right now, I'm comfortable running with a very low cash amount. I mean, right now we have probably several hundred thousand in the bank, but you know, I'm okay as it goes down, whereas others may want, hey, we want a minimum of a million or whatnot. But it does, there's always money coming in and going, you know, coming in from different dispositions. And ideally it's going out to purchases. And I've lined up a few purchases over the next few months that I think will be helpful to us. And we have to make sure the pricing on the other two works like we hope. But there are, you know, having money in the bank. So when I first came back in July, I think there was about $8 million that was sitting there undeployed. And, you know, we're having to pay investors returns on that. So that was not an ideal situation.
Yeah,
so
they get their percent return regardless, right?
Exactly. So that's costly to our fund. And we've had, you know, right now that's remedied and, you know, that should not recur.
What is like the band that you like to stay between, like in percentage wise of cash reserves, or is there just like a magic number you try and stay around?
There's no magic number. I try to keep it very low though. I mean, in the hundreds of thousands, I prefer to go down to 50,000 or something like that, because I know there's always money coming in, you know, sell an REO or some payments or something like that. But you know, I guess there's something to be said for keeping a little bit more for when you get those emergency opportunities. But you know, there's no magic number. But I would say today it probably fluctuates between a couple hundred thousand and several hundred thousand in terms of money on the sidelines. And that's, we just try to deploy it promptly.
And then somebody typed a question to the Q&A box here. I don't know if you can see it. So after looking at recent filings and audited financials, I noticed a large loss in the age proof servicing fund due to personal costs and other expenses. How are dividends being covered during that time?
Sure. So
maybe you can also like talk about like how these guys can go pull the audited financials themselves too.
Sure. So we don't have our audit for 2019 done yet. But we do have, it is posted for 2018, and it's both on our site on AHP servicing. It's also on SEC on the Edgar system. And plus we do have financials that are unaudited through June of 2019 that are also filed on, with the SEC on the, and I believe they're on our site as well. The audit for 2019 is in motion, should be done sometime next month, April. You know, also, you know, the next question any investor will have is, when are my K-1s coming out? And we're trying to get all those out by next week. But the question about personnel costs is that we, I mean, this is front loaded. This is a startup. We have attracted a lot of talent, and that talent costs money. And that's really what I think is going to drive us as a business going forward, the servicer. The costs, we're still generating hundreds of thousands of dollars a month or hundreds of thousands of dollars in servicing fees. So there's a lot of servicing fees that were generated last year. And and that money is used in part to pay personnel costs, but those personnel costs and those other fixed costs, our office, our technology, all those are at a certain level today, and we have a few thousand loans. Now, once we you know, get to 5,000 or 10,000 loans, then those costs will probably increase, but modestly, whereas the income should increase significantly. And that's almost like any business. So that is right now that question, and it's a good question, but that's because we're paying a full team, a full management team, and other support staff. Even though we're not at the level where we need to be in terms of generating the gross servicing fees that we expect to generate later this year.
And this is what sponsor creep is called, guys. This is when an operator gets more and more institutional and more reliable, but you know the margins go down, and you know like this is not 2015 anymore. George is not giving 12% a year. Everybody thought that was a little crazy, but that's what you do in the
game. Yeah. It's a transition. So we had when in the different market, it was easy to pay 12%. Now we're paying 10%. I think, you know, we're envisioning the next fund, which will probably be later this year, which will probably be something significantly lower. I think it'll probably be in the 6 or 7% range. And that's just two factors there as we're maturing as a company. And it also is the, you know, the environment today. It's tough to deploy and earn the double-digit returns like we used to as easily. And also it's also just the market. I mean, the rates keep dropping, and you know, it's should be competitive, we think, to offer 6 or 7% on our next offering. But right now the current offering is 10%. That's gonna stay, and we'll continue to pay it.
So if you guys are, you know, back in the day, a few years ago, when you guys were paying 12%, how much, you guys are making, what, about 40% return on investment?
We did. And you can check back on our prior audited financials. In 2016 audit and 2015 A+, we earned over 39%. In 2017, we earned over 40%. So those were just extraordinary returns, great years. You know, then as you can see, we grew and we institutionalized and the returns dropped. And there's many reasons for that. And we, right now, my target is to get us back into the high teens or maybe low 20s. I don't think, in as long as current market conditions continue, that we are going to be able to get back into the 30s and 40s on any kind of scale in the foreseeable future, until there's another downturn and then it, you know, becomes plausible.
I think AHP is a great way to kind of dip your toe into more of an institutional fund getting there. And monthly payments are great for if you have a reluctant spouse, they get that, you get that instant feedback. In terms of liquidity, as George said, you can sort of take the money in and out as they allow. But I would say, like, this is not a bank account. You can't, this is a note fund that they need their money to working in sort of illiquid assets. And you guys try your best to liquidate people, but I'll say it, and maybe you can say it nicer after, no, it's George.
It's absolutely right. It's absolutely right. We try to redeem, you know, if someone makes a, I think we're current, all redemptions as of, you know, probably through last week are redeemed. We're probably taking anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks on average to process redemptions. So we do our best efforts to do it within 30 days. But like you said, these are liquid assets. You know, we close the month, there's a lot of sales or closings on the last day of the month. You know, I think did a lot of process, a lot of redemptions the early part of this week. So that's what, there's a timing fluctuation. What we're not going to do is to sell assets just to meet redemptions. But again, we've been offering the redemptions since we've been doing Regulation A+. And, you know, I think we've done a pretty good job about keeping them, doing them as timely as possible. And when someone calls in and says, hey, I got a closing next week, I got to get this money back, you know, we've always done our best to accommodate that.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of like liquidity, being able to take your money, if you run into an emergency, what you guys invest in with distressed notes with the huge margins and then the rate of return, I don't think you guys can be beaten at this point with this sort of the goal of your, this part of your portfolio.
Yeah, especially with the redemption. I mean, you touched on it. That makes it very attractive to people. And I know it started because an investor said, hey, can, you know, I just sold a big apartment building. I don't have another place to put the money. Can I give it to you? But I need to know that if I give it to you, then, or invest with you, then if I find another deal, I can get it back. And that was the genesis of offering this 30-day redemption request, best efforts. And but we've done that. And I do see, you touched on it, a few people will go in and out, you know, they're in for 3 months, they're out. And even if they take the reduced return, you know, 8% on the current fund, they're still thinking, well, that's much better than I'm going to do at the bank, so let me just do it. So that's been a...
Yeah, their best alternative is, what, like 3 or 4% in a high rewards checking account? Like, they don't care. They don't.
Exactly.
At best. I think you should make that fee higher in the next one. Yeah. But yeah, just to close out here, George, I mean, like, kind of the story of how you came to, even before you did the non-performing notes, maybe talk a little bit about that. And then, you know, if people want to check out the book and learn more about your story.
Yep.
You know, why is it that you're kind of helping people actually staying in their homes and resettle their debts?
Sure. So good question. I appreciate you bringing it up. And actually, Lane has, there's a great Simple Passive Cash Flow episode, or I've been told it's great. I've listened to it myself. It's tough to critique myself, but the
There was one that we did a few years ago when I first met you, Lane, which is, I don't know what episode number it was, but it was a good episode. And I don't know what questions you asked, but it became a little bit emotional. So this all started, HP was started when, in 2008, but several years before that, I was a low-income housing developer. Basically, I buy the most challenged properties in the country and I try to turn them around. And generally, I had success. There was one property which, after I'd grown this to a nationwide portfolio of about 4,000 units, I bought one property of 1,100 units called Woodland Meadows in Columbus, Ohio, and it got hit by an ice storm, which triggered an extraordinary sequence of events in which I lost everything and ended up $26 million in debt. And that was all happened. The storm happened in 2004. By 2006 was when, you know, 5 and 6 was when I was having my challenges. So 2008 was when I started rebuilding, and that's when I started AHP, and I saw the opportunity in millions of families that were suffering their own Woodland Meadows situation, in that they were underwater on their homes, they were losing their jobs, couldn't afford their payments. And, you know, I had learned from my experience that by offering a solution that's not like, send me your tax returns, let me see what kind of deal we can give for you. We actually send letters to homeowners. We still do it today, where we say, we own your mortgage, you owe $100,000, but we'll take a discounted settlement of $45,000, or your payment is $800,000. We will drop it to $500,000. You owe $20,000 in delinquent payments, we'll take $2,000. And if you make these concrete offers to people in distress, it's tangible. They can say, hey, I can do that. And they respond instead of, you know, send your tax returns and paycheck stubs and all that stuff, and they get in a dance, which many times they don't think that they'll get out of. So that informed us, and I think is what gives us, has continued to give us a big advantage even today as a servicer. We employ many of those tactics for not only the loans that we own, but also the loans that are owned by third parties. So the book is Burn Zone. So I wrote a book to explain everything to investors, about potential investors and everybody else, about, you know, what happened. And it's called Burn Zones. It's on Amazon. Actually, as a simple passive cash flow listener, if you send Lane your mailing address, then he'll get that to us and we'll send you a free paperback copy of Burn Zones. But check it out on Amazon, or request it from Lane, and we'll get you a copy.
And if you guys want to go back in the archives, podcast number 34, listen to George talk about his struggle from going $28 million in the hole and the fight to get back to even. Listen to grown man almost cry.
Huh? Oh no.
It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad.
I don't know what you asked, but it turned out to be, I mean, it was a good, it touched on a few things that were, was,
yeah,
a,
made me feel uncomfortable. I don't like emotion.
Oh. No.
Yeah. Well, good thing we didn't do video back then.
Yeah. Agreed.
That. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, yeah, if you guys want that book, shoot me an email with your mailing address. And if you got any questions, first check out the info page. I mean, we've probably done like 3 or 4 of these webinars like this at simplepassivecashflow.com/AHP. But if you guys want to invest, go to www.ahpservicing.com. And anything else we missed, George?
No, I think that's it. That was any questions people have, you know, reach out to us, or email info@ahpservicing.com, or give us a call at 866-AHP-TEAM, and we're more than happy to answer any questions you have. But we appreciate everybody's support on an ongoing basis, and new investors, you know, we hope that you consider investing with us.
All right. Thanks, George. Thanks,
all right, everybody. Thanks, Lane. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
This website offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Every investor situation is unique. Always seek the services of licensed third-party appraisers and inspectors to verify the value and condition of any property you intend to purchase. Use the services of professional title and escrow companies and licensed tax, investment, and/or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, as in every investment there is risk. The content found here is just my opinion, and things change, and I reserve the right to change my mind. Above all else, do your own analysis and think for yourself, because in the end, you are the only person who is going to look out for your best interests.
The proceeding is not tax, legal, or investment advice, nor an offer to sell securities or investment products. Always make informed decisions with professional guidance. Get educated and surround yourself with a community at thewealthelevator.com/club.